You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. 0% financing for 84 months right now on the 2017 Chevrolet Silverado, plus up to 10 grand in price reductions. This may be the best deal on Silverados ever. Check it out, Lakewood Chev. Shagerby, the serious question, and I think something we have all really overlooked all season long, I noticed it on Saturday night, but Jacob Ruby's hair, the backup offensive lineman for the Edmonton Eskimos, probably doesn't get the love it deserved. That is a pretty sick flow of hair that he has going. Kind of, like the long hair, hockey hair mixed in with greasy straight. It's fantastic.
Huh. Haven't seen an image. Oh, okay. Wait a second. Yeah.
Number 55.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm seeing it. It's, and I see with the Owls, it was even, he had does he still have the full beard going too?
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
He's got the struts hairline with the long flowing locks in the back.
That's a major head of hair. And it's like, there's lots of forehead in like kind of the crescent shape as well, as Struds has. But it's a healthy frock down the back, though. Pretty healthy frock of hair heading down the back.
It's kind of Duck Dynasty hair, really, is what he is.
A little bit.
I got to interview him strictly for that.
If Struds just let it go, like just keep letting it go, like is it that full? Does it have that much body, do you think?
Oh, it's very thick, yeah. The only issue I have is just a little bit of recession in the front. Other than that, it's fine. There, I could have the Hulk Hogan and no problem.
The Hulk Hogan.
Do it.
The Hulk Hogan cul-de-sac.
Yeah,
eh?
You should do it.
The skullet. Well, I'm not. I have to get a lot older. That's probably 10 years away.
No, do it. But dude,
we all know
he was wearing the skullet in his mid-40s. It's right where
really?
You're at. Yeah, 100%.
Poor Hulk,
get in it. Shagger, Eskimo Stampeder game, highly competitive game. Lots of major talking points in that game, from a spotter pulling out Riley, to the throwing of the headset, to a horrific offside call that negated a turnover with 2 minutes to go by the Eskimos, and then the slashing gesture by Edwards. Where do you want to start? What stood out most for you in that game?
Well, I was listening to you on, I think, Low Tide today, and I guess I don't know what you guys have said today about Moss and the outburst on the sidelines. Kind of, I don't know where you guys feel it fits into the big picture of the game, or what the narrative on Moss doing that should be. I don't think it means nothing, and I don't think that it shouldn't be talked about. I do think that I'm not even going to say it had an impact on the game, because I don't know that it did, but I do think that it's definitely something that was notable, and probably something that he'll have to address, or at least not continue to do moving forward. It's not the story of the game, but it was just the best video of the game. But I think Jerry Mottajong formed the question really well, and I give credit to Jerry, because it's not a fun question to ask a coach who's not happy. But, how do you expect to preach discipline to the players when you're taking penalties like that from the bench? And I think that's a fair question. So, I think that Moss probably needs to cool his jets a little bit, and I think it is a little bit hypocritical to be demanding that type of discipline from the players and then not able to display it yourself on the sidelines. So I definitely think that was notable. But to me, in terms of impact on the game, I mean, your starting quarterback getting pulled while you're in the red zone in a tight game like that was crushing for the Eskimos. And as good as Franklin is, they needed Riley in there in that moment.
I love your comment there and what Jerry said about it. I think that the problem is when you see your coach just losing like that and throwing a temper tantrum. We know he's a very intense guy, and I understand that. But ultimately, the players are watching all the time. So the next time a player snaps because he doesn't like a call, how does a coach wheel down and say, hey, man, you can't do that? Well, actually, you just did it, just last week, man. So I feel it can leak into your dressing room, become dangerous.
Well, I get my question to that would be, guys, so if you ask a player, like, here's a coach who's disagreeing with a review call, right? That's when the headset came down. I don't know how a player, if you're suddenly doing a throat gesture because you weren't disagreeing with anybody. Right, like to me, it's kind of different levels of what you're losing your frustration with. Like, I could see if suddenly guys are getting penalties for yelling at the officials. Now that I would agree with, because you say, hey, coach, well, you're doing it. But if we're talking holdings or offsides or things like that, I'm not sure that's a relevant comparison.
But I mean, listen, I was on that sideline. I was 20 feet away from it for the bulk of the game, and like he was yelling at the refs, man. He was livid. He was yelling at the refs. He was yelling at the CFL employees working on the sidelines. I mean, he definitely lost his temper down there, and he lost his cool, and it was for a kind of a prolonged period of time. So, and it happened a number of times. So, I mean, listen, like Jason Moss is super fiery, and did it have a direct impact on the game? No. Did it cause the throat slash gesture later on in the game? No. But he definitely was not taking the temperature of all of that down. So whether it caused it or not shouldn't matter. The coach needs to kind of be setting that example. And when he's sensing his bench is running a little hot, he needs to be able to bring the temperature down, not contribute to it. So I think in those ways it's relevant. No one's going to blame the loss on him, but it's notable. And I think it's something that he probably will try and dial in a little bit moving forward. I think that's probably a responsible way to go about it as a head coach. And quite frankly, I said it this morning, I'm surprised this is the first time we're talking about this with Jason Moss, because we do know how fiery he is. I expected this to be a little bit more regular from him. but to me, he's actually shown a lot of composure on the sidelines for how much fire we know the guy operates with. So I'm not surprised that we're talking about this, and it's not the end of the world. He's still a very good coach, but these are lessons you learn along the way.
The one element of that game that to me needs to change occurred before the game even started. One of the easiest rule changes, but for those who don't know, Mercy Masson blew his Achilles in warm-up, which I don't know how often that's ever going to happen, that a guy has that devastating of an injury in warm-up. The issue is you have to declare your 44-man roster an hour before the game starts. No other sport does this. Like in hockey, you declare your roster after the warm-up, not before the warm-up. And so then the Eskimos in the league that talks about player safety, now they're playing an entire game with one less player. Like, this is an easy rule change at bare minimum to move till after warm-up, right?
Well, and there's a quality of product issue as well.
Yeah.
And you want to put the best product on the field that you can every night if you're these teams. And if you're the league, you want them to do that. And so what are you doing to the quality of the product when you've got guys either playing out of position or you don't have the best candidates playing in each position because of some innate rule that for some arbitrary reason, it's an hour. Now, they'll say, well, teams will try and mess around with one another, and strategically, football is a little bit more of an intense game strategically, so lineup changes you make could dramatically affect lineup changes the other team makes because of matchups and those sorts of things, right? But I think if it's when by the time warm-up ends, if there's any changes that need to be made, the other team will have time to adjust if they need to. I think it is a strange rule. And quite frankly, Jason Moss was already running hot from the very start of that game because that happened. He was super annoyed and agitated that happened and was already in that kind of headspace. And then he lost a review that he didn't think he should have lost. And then it was snap show time.
You know, if we put all that aside, put Jason Moss's antics to the side, Mike Riley being pulled out, maybe the throat slashing, all that stuff, the Eskimos, you know, made it close. And they could have tied it, taken overtime if a field goal would have been hit. Do you see a change the last 2 weeks in this team towards trending again to where they were maybe not the game 6 and 7, but games kind of 1 through 5 where they're starting to find their stride again?
Well, I mean, I didn't see a team that was shooting itself in the foot in the same way in this last game. Like, the penalties were tough, and they didn't need those penalties that they took, but they weren't turning the ball over as much at awful times. They weren't, making a mess of it. Maximoff just scored the winner for the Oilers, by the way. I've just got the game on YouTube here. They were up 4-2 on the Canuck rookies and then ended up in overtime, and Maximoff just scored the winner. Anyway, I think that they put a good game together against the best team in the league. They weren't embarrassed. They weren't blown out. They were right in there. They pushed them hard. They did a better job protecting the ball. They couldn't get out of their own way with some penalties, but I think they played well enough to be in and win that game, and that's a big step forward from where this team has been the last few weeks, wouldn't you guys think?
Well, I thought their defense played spectacular, considering how many injuries they have in their secondary, because not only did Masson go out before the game, Peters got injured again. You know, you had two guys playing corner who've never even played corner, and, you know, the defensive front got a lot of pressure on Bo Levi Mitchell. To me, their offense, for all the yards you put up, you have to find a way to get more points in the end zone, ultimately.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, But if you think about it, if you have Mike Riley in that one drive down into the red zone, maybe they do push that through.
Maybe, and then,
you know, and that makes a difference. They need to, I mean, the other thing too is they needed a stop, right? They really needed a stop at the end, and the penalty didn't help. But I mean, they allowed some significant plays against. They're defensively, they were kind of shoddy in a couple of big moments that let them push the ball down the field, right? When this defense needs a big stop, they're a little bit inconsistent. Now, earlier on in the game, they come up with back-to-back huge stops, interceptions, in fact, that shift the momentum of the game and shift things. So, but they were a little bit porous when it really mattered. Now, you could say the same thing about the Stampeders because the Eskimos drove the ball down on them in 24 seconds and had enough time to try and tie the game. So I think it was a big step forward for the group. I think the injuries created some adversity for them. I think the offense, excuse me, guys, I think the offense is going to continue to be deadly, and I think it's going to get even better because Walker, and I know he's been here before, but first game back looked super comfortable. They used him a bunch of different ways. They're really, really potent, and when they get it all in sync and harnessed, I think they're going to put up a lot of points.
Quickly, Shauger, what's expectations, if any, of Chris Kelly?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't have huge expectations. I don't think he comes into camp with much of a shot to grab onto a spot unless there's some significant injuries. He's older. He's 37 years old. He's a bit of a utility knife. He can do a number of different things. I think this was a case where there was no contract to be found. He's got a history with his general manager and Peter Chiarelli. You know, it's good to have veterans around to get into exhibition games too. They got a large number of games to play in a short period of time, and the more veterans you have, the more you can maybe rest some other guys. So I'm not being disrespectful to Chris Kelly, but he managed to be in an NHL lineup 82 games last year, guys. That's significant. For 82 games, there were other players wanting to be in his spot in the lineup, and he was there every night. So I don't think you just write him off, but I think Peter Shirley's made it pretty clear that he wants to play the young guys on this team and not put veterans in front of them. So I'd be surprised if he took any time away unless somebody really dropped the ball.
Shauger, enjoy your night. We will chat with you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good, guys. Take care.
Ryan Rashog from TSN.